folks, mostly the black men that I know, don't like to show their vulnerability. But when they do, they have to do so in a trustful environment around people they trust. And they're better for doing it. And so that to me, I find is very important. And I recommend for other black men that I interact with and I've worked with, even my family members and close friends and things of that nature, to find some mechanism where they can connect with somebody who kind of would experience the same thing they have experienced, and but somebody that they value and trust and they feel comfortable talking to, because at the end of the day, it feels good to know that you have other folks going through what you have gone through or what you're going through. It really helps to, in my opinion, it helps to make me feel, oh, I'm not the only one. This is not an isolated thing. I'm actually human. So, or wait a minute, there's more humans out there other than me. That's good. And it really helps me. It lessens the weight, lessens the load, and helps me to move forward towards a period of healing.
I love how you mentioned that sense of community. It could be in the basketball court, it could just be sitting together, right? So these sort of informal practices of your culture and how that can help with healing. I want to ask you though, so on the same lens, you mentioned vulnerabilities with your group and the people you support and work with. Are there systemic barriers that hinder healing, for example, that you can think of or experience? For particularly for black men and for marginalized communities, right? It's great how you mentioned we should get together and support each other, but I'm curious about what sort of barriers you or the community have experienced with regard to healing.
Oh, well, that's a really deep question. And I can't speak to all of those barriers, but there are a lot of systems in place historically designed for black men in particular, because I'm speaking from a black male's perspective, that has impacted black men's inability to heal effectively and efficiently. And so that within itself is another podcast. But I think that from my experience, from a systemic perspective, there is that concept of how can we gather and are we safe when gathering? For example, we have a group of black men in public. The common place, you would say that social stereotype is the barbershop. And, we're in the barbershop. And we have a lot of black men in the barbershop, and we're getting a haircut, and we're just hanging out, and we're chilling. But is that barbershop a safe place? Yeah, it is, because that's within the boundaries, it's within the walls of the shop. That's the society knows that we're in there and we're good. But if we take that same concept and move it outside of that barbershop concept, and we're just meeting in the park, ready to do some type of activity. And then all of a sudden, we have things like harassment. We have authority figures come into play. We have community members calling security or police or impacting our ability to not gather effectively and efficiently. Those things have happened. And whether they have not, it's the mindset of the black men that thinking, wait a minute, a group of us are together. How are we making other, are we making other folks comfortable just because we're seen together in this group? And that plays on our minds, and that happens. It is that process of recurrent trauma, of constantly knowing that, there are groups in society that feel very uncomfortable when a group of black men come together. So, I mean, that's an example of, of a systemic process. When it comes to black men coming together to participate in any form of activity or community or shared action that leads to a healing process. And that is the ability to feel safe itself within the concept of healing. Are we safe to hang out? Are we safe to go to the restaurant together? I mean, are we going to be treated differently in a way? because historically we have, and what makes the difference now. So it's that level of just even feeling safe. And my thing here is how can one, how can people feel safe when they need themselves to be healed? I think part of us be, to heal, regardless of whatever form of healing we're going through due to what we've experienced, we need to be in a safe environment to do so. But if we're not in a safe environment, then how can we contribute to a healing process? So how can we heal when we don't feel safe? And that is what is that's the outcome of a system that historically has been designed to not help us as Black men go through a process of healing.
Yeah. Thank you, Daniel. You've given us so much to think about in terms of healing spaces, some of the barriers that you've experienced, and some of the barriers that the community have experienced. So to close, I want to zoom out and maybe look forward a little bit, right? So despite those barriers and experience that you've mentioned, what does a future rooted in healing, justice, and liberation look like to you?
Yeah, a future, I'm going to say openness, open mind, collectivity, collaboration, and acceptance of one another. I think that bottom line is we're not islands amongst ourselves, even though sometimes I wish I was an island, a Caribbean island per se. Once in a while, you know, sand on the beach, water, all the, you know, palm trees makes feels good. But the reality is that I am not an island. You are not an island. And we need to be surrounded by individuals from different walks of life in order for the collectivity to succeed, for us collectively to succeed. And to have that open mind, that ability to forgive, and that ability to work collaboratively with other individuals, and to learn from their experiences and to put commonalities together, and acknowledge differences, but to come to a place of peace with that in order to move forward with greater justice and positive outcomes. I think that is what the future really should look like. And do we, as human beings and in multiple communities, have the ability to do so? I think yes. I'm going to say yes, we do. And I think a lot of work needs to be done in order for diversified communities to come together to work collectively. To achieve those things, to achieve greater outcomes. And keeping our eyes on the prize and eliminating distractions. It sounds hairy and fairy, it sounds very nice and interesting, but challenging to do. But I think that that should not deter us as human beings, as people, as our own community, within our community. To not stop trying and seek for that greater outcome.
Well, thank you so much, Daniel. Thank you for your time and your words today. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Remember, healing isn't something we carry alone. It grows through community and care and involvement and just taking the time to hear each other out and be there for each other, as Daniel has shared. Again, thank you for joining us for Healing Together, a special podcast created in the context of SFU's Sexual Assault Awareness Month 2026. Please follow us on Instagram at SFU SVSPO to learn more about our work and how we support the SFU community. We hope these conversations with Daniel spark reflection, connection, and healing. Until next time, bye-bye.
This project was made possible through the guidance, technical support, and generous hosting of CJSF 90.1 FM. We wish to recognize the assistance offered by CJSF volunteers, and our gratitude also goes to Duane Woods at the SFU Center for Educational Excellence for editing and episode transcription. If you or someone you know in the SFU community has been impacted by sexualized violence, please reach out to the SVSPO at our website, www.sfu.ca/sexual-violence. To learn more about our events and resources, you can follow us on Instagram at sfu.svspo. Thank you for being part of this conversation and for joining us in community.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. Your alternative to mainstream media. Broadcasting from Simon Fraser University at Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
This is Bird Note. For some birds, having the best nest is a key part of attracting a mate. Males of many weaver bird species construct a series of intricately woven nests with which to lure a prospective partner. If a female is dissatisfied with it, though, she doesn't just move on. She tears the nest apart, as if to show her disdain. A male red-winged blackbird can even attract multiple mates if he controls a prime breeding territory, where nests can be built over the water, making them less accessible to predators like raccoons. Adélie penguins construct their nests on mounds of stones, which help guard against flooding, and partners often exchange stone gifts during the course of construction. Unfortunately, stones can be in short supply, which leads to skirmishes within the nesting colony, as stones are stolen and fiercely guarded. No stone, one might say, left unturned. For Bird Note, I'm Wenfei Tong.
Hi, my name is Lowell, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Simon Fraser Campus Radio.
Would you give me a beat?
CJSF 90.1 FM is the campus radio station for Simon Fraser University, located on Burnaby Mountain in BC, Canada. CJSF 90.1 FM, diverse, independent, yours. Check us out on SoundCloud or at cjsf.ca.
Welcome to CJSF 90.1 FM, the campus and community radio station here at SFU in Burnaby, BC, where we broadcast from unceded coast Salish territories. My name is Nicole Hines, and today I'm excited to be joined by Daniel Sheriff, Associate Director at the Black Student Center. Simon Fraser University is establishing a Black Student Center dedicated to providing permanent, culturally appropriate, and identity-affirming support services for Black-identifying students at SFU's three campuses located in Burnaby, Surrey, and Vancouver. So thank you so much for joining me today, Daniel. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. It's a Friday.
It's a Friday, and the weather is weathering. It's all right
it's
out there.
Yes, it is all right.
Exactly. No snow on the mountain.
No snow on the mountain today.
Absolutely.
It was a little bit in the last couple of days, but you know.
Absolutely.
It didn't hang around.
No, it didn't hang around, so I'm so happy that you're here. I have a few questions about the Black Student Center, and I would love for you to share some information about the center. So, first question is, can you, number one, tell me about the center, and then also maybe talk about why you think a center like this should exist at SFU?
Well, the Black Student Center is a location that operates as a hub that is designed to provide an array of student support services for Black students and students who self-identify as Black. It really takes on the spirit of supporting the mindsets and the experiences of students on campus that historically did not have access to supports that they've found to be valuable for them. And it also plays a role in propelling those students in a way where it highlights their experiences to ensure that what they had experienced does not move forward
right
with respect to future cohorts.
Right.
And so it's really designed in order to establish an infrastructure where we can only move forward with respect to supporting students who self-identify as Black by being present and by establishing opportunities for those students to thrive. Opportunities that students historically probably did not have access to.
Absolutely.
With respect to SFU.
Yes, totally, totally understood. And if you could share, what has the journey been for like taking, you know, the idea of having the Black Student Center at SFU to it almost coming to life, right?
My journey has been, I have to admit, short. I started in February of last year.
Okay.
But I do know that this journey, you know, probably started probably around 2020.
Okay.
And it really was a culmination of student voices and faculty voices and leadership voices within the Black community within SFU. And it's trickled throughout the years. We're intensifying,
right?
Advocating for more supports for Black students, addressing issues that have impacted the Black community within SFU, and taking those experiences, wrapping them up into some structure where it's advocated to those who make decisions within the university to start the process of establishing an infrastructure to better support the community.
Love it.
Now, there are a lot of other things in play that that are designed to support the community. The Black Student Center is one.
Right. Okay.
And so that's important to identify. But the focal point is the Black Student Center right now. And so the Black Student Center really has been structured due to the voices of great students that were enrolled, now currently alum, and the support of faculty and staff during the time of 2020, 2021, 2022, and really highlighting up until to date.
So we're having this conversation at the beginning of 2026, and I was just saying, I know, it's
no
like,
way.
Listen, let me tell you, I was just having a conversation with my colleagues and said, like, we're already 9 days in. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like the time is really progressing quickly. However, this project has been going on for now. This is like 6 years, and it's finally coming to life. So I know you haven't been there from the starting of the journey, but, you know, my next question is going to be is like, when will the center be available and open to students to access?
Yeah, so the center will be open for students to access in February.
Okay.
So in February, we're going to have a series of events.
Okay.
February the 6th, we're going to have a student day slash open house.
And nice.
It is a concept where students and faculty, staff, the SFU community can visit the Black Student Center.
Awesome.
And do receive like a guided tour of this place. We're going to have a Black Healing Circle.
Oh, nice.
During that event from 1 to 2, and then from 2 to 3, we're going to have a student panel.
Okay.
Consisting of students.
Yeah.
And that's from 2 to 3. And then from 3 to 4, we're going to have an Afrobeats dance class.
Okay.
Demonstration in one of the rooms. And then throughout the entire time from 1 to 4, you know, students can drop in, maybe grab some food, listen to some music, something of that nature.
Awesome.
So it's just an opportunity to open the doors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's safe to say that that will be the informal launch where students can actually go into the center and just kind of just get engaged, mm-hmm. be familiarized with the surroundings.
Awesome.
And then throughout the month, we're going to have a series of mini events leading up to a formal launch of the space.
Okay.
Which will take place on February the 19th.
Okay.
And then starting March is when full operations.
It's expected.
Implemented.
Okay. And then, okay, so when it comes to full operations, what does that mean? What would the hours roughly, and also the location? I should probably ask that. So those are two questions. Like, where would it be located? And then what would the hours of access kind of be?
Yeah, so the Black Student Center would be located in the Maggie Benson Center.
Okay.
On the second floor.
Nice.
Right next to the cafeteria.
Yes.
And across the hall from the bookstore.
Okay.
So you definitely will be able to see it. It's a
nice.
Very large glass wall. And
okay.
You're going to see it. So you just definitely cannot miss it.
Love it. Love it.
And the hours of operations would be from 8:30 to 4:30, Monday to Friday.
Okay. Nice. Nice. And will there be any services that students will be able to access, like when the center is like fully functioning and stuff, like let's say spring and all that? Or is it going to be a place that people can hang out in? What would be the vibe?
Very good question. So we're going to have an array of different kinds of services.
Awesome.
That would be offering to students, mm-hmm. supports to services. So for example, like academic advice and
mm-hmm.
supports, career and volunteer services support.
Nice.
Student co-op supports.
Nice.
Counseling supports.
Nice.
Wellness supports.
Important. I just want to throw that in. Yeah. Okay, sorry. Carry on.
And then cultural development, cultural awareness.
Nice.
Programming.
Nice.
To really reflect the diversity of our community.
Mm-hmm.
So we do hope to host a lot of culturally based programs out of the center. And also an opportunity to connect with the broader Black community within the Lower Mainland.
I love it.
Connected students with the community.
Yes.
Build connection.
Yes.
Bridges.
Yep.
And definitely partnerships with
yes.
many different faculties and business units across the campus, across
awesome.
Burnaby, Vancouver, and Surrey campuses.
Mm-hmm.
And with the focal point of partnering to provide ongoing services,
love.
Support services for students.
Love it, love it. So it's basically not, things aren't going to be set in stone. Like basically things can evolve and organically shift and change as the needs
100%.
Yeah.
And that's one of the important factors with respect to the center.
Mm-hmm.
It is going to be an ongoing process of service delivery, but flexible service delivery, because what we provide now may not be what's best next year.
That's that part.
So always being mindful in terms of what are some of the key things that students need.
Exactly.
And what can we do to support them to access those particular things?
Absolutely.
To the best of our abilities. Mm-hmm. And to constantly be in a position to find answers to those questions will be the driving force behind the Black Student Center.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay, so we got a lot of information about the center. We basically know a lot of information as to like some of the soft launches and when it's actually going to be open. I have a question that now shifts to Black History Month, because that is literally just around the corner. And I am curious if there are any events that you are aware of that you might be attending that you might want to share now. And I know that throughout, listen, guys, on the, you know, CGSF, we're going to be like, you know, talking about events throughout the month, even starting now because we are in January. But I'm just curious if there's anything that you wanted to share.
Yes, for sure. Definitely, I know on February the 19th,
mm-hmm.
the morning of February the 19th, from 10 to 12, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m.,
We're going to have an In Conversation event.
Oh, nice.
And the In Conversation concept seems to be an annual now process with SFU, with Black History Month. And this year, we're going to have an In Conversation event featuring a conversation between Dr. Wisdom Titi, who is the president and vice provost of Carleton University.
Okay.
And also the chair of the Scarborough Charter of Anti-Black Racism and Black Inclusion in Higher Education.
Okay.
And he is going to be here in Vancouver, Burnaby, at SFU, at the Gathering House.
Okay, right on.
Having a conversation with our very own Dr. Yabom Gilpin-Jackson.
Hey.
Absolutely, our very own.
Yeah, that's what I was like. Hey, listen, snapping.
and they're going to have an inter-conversation. They're going to have a conversation with respect to higher education in today's world. And what does that look like with respect to our Black community and diversity? And some of the challenges that higher education experience in, in today's world. So they're going to have a conversation focusing on that. So definitely check out that when you receive more information about it.
Definitely.
We're also going to have on February the 17th, a panel discussion focusing on Hogan's Alley.
Okay, right on.
And if folks who are not aware of what Hogan's Alley is, Hogan's Alley is technically Vancouver's first official Black community where the residents from the community was displaced from the city of Vancouver due to the construction and development of the viaduct that's currently in place at downtown Vancouver. So anyhow, we're going to have a focus group, a discussion panel with some scholars, community leaders, and some artists about Hogan's Alley in a way to educate the public a little bit more about the history of Hogan's Alley, the legacy, and the future ideologies and movements with respect to Hogan's Alley. Like, what's next?
Right.
What's going on?
Right.
What are some of the key things the public would need to know about Hogan's Alley? So we're going to have that event, currently working on it, and it will be located at, or the venue will be, the Gibson Museum.
Oh, okay, cool. Awesome.
We're partnering with the Gibson Museum and their fabulous team to put on that event.
Awesome.
That's another event to definitely look out for.
Love it. Thank you so much for sharing that. And like I mentioned, we will be posting information, like usually in show notes and things like that, for people to be connected. And there's a lot of talk shows that we have on air that we will kind of be talking about it over and over again. So, oh my goodness, we're just about to wrap up. But I wanted to ask, like, how can folks get more information about the Black Student Center or some of the other initiatives that are happening as they're listening on the airwaves?
Yeah, they can definitely check out the Black Student Center webpage.
Okay.
The process of transitioning that webpage into a website.
Okay.
But definitely you can check that out. Check us out at the Black Student Center webpage right now. And it's off of the SFU platform.
Perfect.
And you can also send an email to bsc_admin@sfu.ca, so bsc admin at sfu.ca, and if you send an email via that website, well, not website, that email address, you'll be able to get in contact with me and someone else from the Black Student Center team. And I think those would be the two best ways of getting a hold of us, but at the end of the day, I think what's best would be to go to the Maggie Benson and visit us at the center.
Hey.
Be in a position to just walk in and introduce yourselves.
Absolutely.
And start connecting with people. Because really, that's one of the key things that we want to present here through the center, is establishing that community within a community. So the community is familiarized with one another. So
absolutely.
Folks walking in and seeing who's there and having the opportunity to connect.
Love it. And guys, I plan to be there at many of the events, especially on the 6th. So I can't wait to also talk about that after the fact on air. So that will be incredible. I want to thank you for joining me today, Daniel. I really appreciate your time. And I look forward to visiting, like I said, the Black Student Center next month.
Sounds great.
Yay. Thank you. And you've been tuned into CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, broadcasting from the unceded Coast Salish territories.
Hi.